I'd like to welcome you all to our featured session, What is Old is New, and we're going to be talking this morning about two old vaccine-preventable diseases that are providing some challenges for us now, mumps and pertussis. I have a disclosure announcement I need to read this morning for this session. CDC, our planners, and the presenters in this session wish to disclose they have no financial interests or other relationships with the manufacturers of commercial products, suppliers of commercial services, or commercial supporters. Presentation in this session will not include any discussion of the unlabeled use of a product or a product under investigation or use, with the exception of Thomas Clark, who will discuss ACIP recommendations for off-label use of DTaP vaccine in persons aged over 65 years and between 7 and 10 years. There is no commercial support for this activity. Our first speaker today is Kathleen Gallagher, and the first topic is mumps in the post-vaccination era, challenges to outbreak control. As many of you may remember, back in 2006, mumps kind of reared its head in a very unexpected way and resulted in outbreak of 6,500 cases across the country, involving many of your states, I'm sure, and we were all scrambling to do a lot of studies and understand what happened then. Then things quieted down again a little, although we did have more cases reported than before 2006. And then again in 2009, we saw outbreaks in the Northeast, in New York City, New Jersey, and in some of the counties in New York State. Kathleen Gallagher is currently the director of the Division of Notifiable Diseases and Healthcare Information in OCELS at CDC. Until just recently, she was a team leader for measles, mumps, rubella, and polio activities with the Epidemiology Branch, Division of Viral Diseases, the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases at CDC. In that capacity, she was responsible for overseeing all the activities related to surveillance and investigations of domestic measles, mumps, rubella, and polio. Kathy was closely involved and led the efforts to evaluate the outbreaks in Orange County, New York, in collaboration with state and local health departments, many of whom are here, and in particular to evaluate a third dose of MMR vaccine for outbreak control in Orange County, New York in 2010. Please welcome Kathy Gallagher.
Okay. Good morning. Let me see if I can get my ABs right. Okay. I guess not. Okay. Okay, so today I'm going to start by giving you a little bit of background information about mumps, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about mumps epidemiology, both in the pre-vaccine era and the post-vaccine era. I'll talk about some recent mumps outbreaks in the U.S. and elsewhere across the globe, and then talk about some of the challenges that these outbreaks have presented with regard to control measures. I'll talk about some measures for controlling mumps outbreaks that were investigated during these past this past year and a half. And then I'll give you the results of those, and then I'll speculate a little bit about the future of mumps control. Wrong way. Okay. So just the very basics, mumps is a paramyxovirus. It's in the same family as viruses like measles and parainfluenza and RSV. It's a single-stranded RNA virus that has one serotype. Humans are the only natural host that we know of. And although there are many different causes of peritis, as far as we know, the mumps virus is the only cause of epidemic peritis. Pathogenesis of mumps involves the droplet inoculation of upper respiratory mucosa, which then leads to viral replication and then spread to the local lymph nodes, the plasma and leukocytes, and then eventual seeding of the salivary glands, gonads, the pancreas, central nervous system, et cetera. The incubation period is usually 16 to 18 days, but there's a range of anywhere from 12 to 25 days. People with mumps are usually the most infectious a few days before onset of their peritis till about 5 days afterwards, although viral shedding has been documented for a longer period of time. And our epidemiology suggests that that mumps is probably quite a bit less infectious than measles and maybe slightly less infectious than varicella. So a lot of you know this and have seen whoever this person is many times on a slide. The typical clinical presentation for mumps is peritonitis, and in postpubertal boys, up to 37% may develop orchitis. Many people with mumps have nonspecific respiratory symptoms, and up to 30% of persons with mumps are thought to be asymptomatic, although we don't really know if this percentage holds true in the vaccine era. Complications such as deafness, asymptomatic meningitis, and encephalitis occur, but are rare, especially, again, in the post-vaccine era. So before we had a vaccine for mumps, mumps was basically endemic throughout the world, and we would see the peak incidence in the U.S. in children who are aged 5 to 9. Sero surveys that were conducted in that era suggested that about 90% of urban dwellers would have been infected by the time they were 14, and this suggests that we probably had millions of cases of mumps happening every year, even though they weren't reported. And outbreaks were commonly reported in crowded settings such as the military, prisons, orphanages, and schools. Not that different than what we'll be seeing when I present you some other information. So this slide just demonstrates in yellow the actual, this sort of cyclical peak that would happen with mumps in the pre-vaccine era, and more or less every 3 years or so there would be a little uptick or a little epidemic. Now we're at the post-vaccine era. So the mumps vaccine was licensed in 1967, and even though it was licensed, it wasn't recommended for routine use immediately. But despite that, we started to see decreases in mumps incidence. And then in 1977, the ACIP recommended the universal use of mumps vaccine for children, and we continue to see further declines in mumps incidence. And that went along, you know, pretty well until the late 80s, when there was a resurgence of mumps that happened between 1986 and 1992. Now, this overlapped with the measles outbreak, measles resurgence that happened around then. And some of you who are as old as me will remember that there was then a second dose of MMR that was recommended for measles control in 89. And after that, again, we saw subsequent declines in incidence of mumps. Till, you know, through the 1990s and into the early 2000s, where we really reached a nadir of about 300 cases a year. And then, as Jane mentioned, in 2006, we saw another mumps outbreak, and then in 2009 and 10, a few more outbreaks, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. So most of you, I think, are familiar with this. The current recommendations for MMR vaccine are that two doses be given, one at 12 to 15 months of age and the other at school entry. Vaccine effectiveness for the mumps component of the MMR vaccine has been estimated to be between 79 and 95%. And currently, there's no recommendations for a third dose of MMR vaccine, either for current use, for routine use, or in an outbreak scenario. So I'll talk in a few minutes about how we evaluated whether or not a third dose of MMR might be useful in that sort of setting. I want to talk just a minute about mumps in other countries. So like the U.S., countries using effective mumps vaccines have also experienced rapid and dramatic declines in mumps cases, and you can see some examples on this slide. Surveillance for mumps has never been quite what it is for measles or rubella or something, and so in some countries, surveillance wasn't really adequate to document what impact mumps vaccine had, but I think it's fair to say that no matter where mumps vaccine was introduced, there was a substantial impact on the incidence. So mumps vaccine is effective. This just gives you an idea of globally what countries are using mumps vaccine. These are the countries that are highlighted in gold on this slide. About 61% of countries throughout the globe use some sort of mumps vaccine in their immunization schedule. And you can see this is primarily focused in the Western Hemisphere and in developed countries throughout Asia and Europe. So now, let's go up to 2006. This is when we saw our first outbreak of mumps in a highly vaccinated two-dose population. And this is the epidemic curve that probably many of you have seen that describes that 2006 outbreak. So there were over 6,500 cases that were reported between January 1st and December 31st, 2006. And if we calculated national incidence for that time period, it was about 2.2 per 100,000, which was about 20 times higher than the usual 1 in a million that we saw in the time period previous to that. So in that outbreak, the majority of affected 18 to 24-year-olds were college students. There were a couple of different outbreaks that occurred on college campuses that had very high two-dose MMR coverage. And some risk factors for vaccine failure were identified, including younger age or being a college freshman, living on campus versus off campus, being a female, or having received your second dose of mumps vaccine more than 10 years in the past. And although mumps vaccine effectiveness studies are challenging in populations that have extremely high vaccine coverage, there were some studies that were done that estimated vaccine effectiveness for two doses to be between 80 and 88%. This outbreak in 2006 was believed to be the result of an importation from the UK, which was experiencing its own outbreak of mumps in 2004 and 2005, where they had over 70,000 reported cases. And unlike the 2006 outbreak in the U.S., the vaccination status of most of these cases was that they were unvaccinated. They were in a susceptible cohort that had not received mumps vaccination because they were of an age that they were too old. The mumps vaccination program in the U.K. started after that, but they also hadn't been exposed to natural mumps because of lack of circulating virus. So now that moves us up to 2010. So this slide just shows different areas that reported mumps outbreaks or clusters in 2010, and there are some common themes here. One is that usually these are reported in younger age groups, and you know, the median age is almost always less than 25. In many of these outbreaks, or most of them, parotitis, a very traditional clinical picture, was observed. When vaccination status was known, most of these had very high two-dose reported coverage in people who developed mumps, and sites such as schools, colleges, prisons, households, and sporting events all were reporting these mumps outbreaks. So along with the U.S., there's a lot of mumps outbreaks going on in Europe, and I've summarized some of them on this slide. So there's outbreaks going on, some of which are still continuing, in Israel, Netherlands, Germany, and Scotland. And the number, I want to just make a note here, that there's actually thousands of cases that have been reported from these outbreaks. These numbers that I have here are summarized from published reports in Eurosurveillance. But in I think all cases except Israel, these outbreaks are still ongoing. So you can see the median age, it ranges from 14 and a half to 24 and a half. And that, again, in most of these outbreaks, most of the cases have had more than one MMR. The thing that's, I think, striking about a lot of these outbreaks is they all have similar settings. In Israel, it was associated with yeshivas, and I'll talk about the U.S. outbreak that was associated with that. And in the Netherlands and Scotland, there were actually school dances or parties that were the initial event that started these outbreaks going. So here we are now back in the present. And I'm going to talk a little bit about an outbreak, actually two outbreaks of mumps that have happened in the U.S. during this time. So everybody will remember the fall of 2009 in this room. We were all busily watching what was going to happen with H1N1. And so these outbreaks of mumps took us a little bit by surprise. In the Northeast, there were primarily four locations that were affected by this outbreak, and I have them here on this slide. They're Orange County, New York, Rockland County, New York, New York City, and Ocean County, New York. And one of the things that these locations all have in common is they have large Orthodox Jewish communities, and this was the community that was primarily affected in this outbreak. This is the epidemic curve for this outbreak in the Northeast. And this slide shows you that the peak occurred in around December or January. It varied a little bit by location. But one of the important things I think to note on this slide is that the outbreak seemed to accelerate in sort of the early fall, in September, October. And this coincided with the occurrence of the Jewish high holidays, when there's a lot of congregation. And actually people from some of these other counties in New York go into New York City for religious occasions. So to summarize what happened in the Northeast, there were about just over 3,500 cases that were reported between June of 2009 and June 2010, and transmission, at least initially, was focused in yeshivas, which are sex-segregated religious schools, and yeshivas are really attended by mostly boys. So not surprisingly, most of the cases in these outbreaks were school-aged boys. 53% of the case patients were between 15 and 17 years of age, and 71% of the cases were males. Vaccine status was reported for 72% of the case patients, and of these, 75% had actually documented two doses of MMR vaccine. This outbreak started, again, we have to blame the UK for this. So there was an Orthodox Jewish boy who was returning from travel to the United Kingdom in June, and upon his return, he went to summer camp in Sullivan County, and this camp was exclusively for Orthodox Jewish boys. There was then a small outbreak in that camp. Kids from that camp then went on to their various communities, mostly in either New York or New Jersey, and that sort of seeded the population in these four geographic locations. Altogether, more than 96% of all of the case patients in this outbreak belong to the Orthodox Jewish community, which for the most part is a very insular population and has pretty limited interaction with the outside community. The children in this community mostly attend exclusively Jewish schools, and most of the families are very large, with a median household size of around 10. In this outbreak, transmission seemed to be magnified by the crowding in the yeshivas, which is illustrated by this slide. So this is a picture taken at one of the affected schools in Orange County of one of the study halls that that these boys would spend multiple hours a day in. And so they would be in this study hall, and I don't know, maybe depending on the day, 4, 6, maybe more hours, and they had intense face-to-face contact with their study partners while they were studying the Torah. And we really feel like this may, although we are not able to quantify this, we really feel like this may have played a role in transmission in this outbreak. So now, meanwhile, on the other side of the world, in Guam, there's another mumps outbreak that's brewing. So mumps, so Guam, for people who don't know, is a U.S. territory. It has a population of about 180,000, and it follows the ACIP recommendations for MMR vaccination. So now the epidemic curve for Guam. So this shows you the epidemic curve. There were originally some cases retrospectively that were identified back in December and January, but you can see, again, the peak of cases here occurs around April or so. And in the yellow bars, we have cases in 19 to 14-year-olds. And the reason I've highlighted those is that they really had the highest attack rate of any age group on the island. So there were about 500 cases in total in Guam. We had a much more equal distribution of males and females. The median age here was 12, which is pretty young. And there were some complications, but again, the rates were pretty low. About 5% of post-pubertal boys reported orchitis. So all of these outbreaks that I've just highlighted, I think, speak to some of the challenges that we have in mumps control in this day and age. So, you know, one of those is primary vaccine failure. Another is waning immunity, which is probably magnified by the fact that we really don't have much wild mumps virus circulating in the U.S. We know that there might be suboptimal vaccine effectiveness for the mumps component of MMR. We know that implementation of isolation and control measures and quarantine measures can be challenging, especially if there's a large outbreak. We can't basically make everybody stay home. And probably asymptomatic transmission is playing some sort of role here, which we can't quantify, and there is an unknown impact of community mitigation measures. And so it leaves us a little bit at a loss of knowing what we should do in these outbreaks. This slide is to just briefly show you that, you know, there have been studies done that have looked at two-dose vaccine effectiveness, and we believe two-dose vaccine effectiveness is pretty high. These studies would suggest it's somewhere in the range of 88 to 95%. But a recent study done in New York City shows that two-dose vaccine effectiveness, at least in this particular outbreak, might be lower than that. And so this slide is from Chris Zimmerman and colleagues in New York City, thank you, and suggests that vaccine effectiveness in this particular outbreak in New York might be about 80%. So what are we to do? Are we at the point in the epidemiology of mumps where our control measures are limited to what we would have done in the pre-vaccine era? So should we just not let Greg go out to play? Or do we have something else we can offer? So during the past year and a half, we've had two opportunities, actually, to study whether or not the administration of a third dose of MMR vaccine during an outbreak might have some sort of effect on mitigating that outbreak. So we conducted these studies both in Orange County and in Guam, which I described to you, and they each had slightly different targeted age groups. And this is because we basically targeted the age groups that had the highest mumps attack rates. Because MMR vaccine, a third dose of it, is not routinely recommended by ACIP, we got IRB approval both at CDC and locally to do these studies. And to be included in these studies, the schools involved had to have ongoing mumps transmission in the preceding 2 weeks and also high two-dose MMR coverage, which had to be documented by a vaccine audit. So now some results. So this graph shows the mumps age-specific attack rates in Orange County, New York, calculated for 28-day intervals. And the red vertical line here is the intervention period. So I want to point out a couple things here. One is you'll notice the outbreak was on the decline before we arrived, which is, you know, frequently the case in public health. But the other thing I want to point out is that the yellow line here, which is the group that was targeted for intervention, the 11 to 17-year-olds, continued to have a sharp decline in mumps incidence after the intervention, which wasn't true in the other age groups. So you can see there is some increase, at least temporarily, in incidence rates in those ages. We also calculated the rate ratios, looking at the pre-intervention and post-incubation periods for these different age groups in Orange County. And we found that although there was a decrease in many of the age groups, that it really was most striking in the 11 to 17-year-olds, which we've highlighted here, where a rate ratio of almost 29 was noted when we compared the pre-intervention to the post-incubation period. So this figure now shows what happened in Guam. And again, we've got the red arrow here that shows when the third dose intervention was occurred, which was the week of May 17th. About 1,300 doses of MMR vaccine were given out to 19 to 14-year-olds. And what we know is that the attack rates in that age group that was vaccinated declined by 93% after that intervention was given. As in Orange County, we noted declines in other age groups, but the decline was most marked at 71% here in the group that was targeted for vaccination. So, to summarize our results then, declines in mumps incidence were noted after administration of a third dose of MMR vaccine in both of these two different settings. And although there were declines in many age groups, they were most pronounced in the age groups that were targeted for this vaccination program. Now, we have some limitations in these two studies here. Our analyses are not 100% complete, especially in Guam, where that is still ongoing. The outbreaks were on the decline when these studies were conducted. And in Guam, the end of the school year, which occurred basically the week after the vaccine was given, probably played some sort of role in mitigating this outbreak. So, that being said, what does the future hold for mumps control? Well, I'm willing to bet the house that additional outbreaks of mumps in highly vaccinated populations are going to occur in the years to come. So I think we can all just count on that happening. Currently, we don't have any data that would support a routine use of a third dose of MMR vaccine, But I think the data that I just presented suggests that a third dose of MMR vaccine might be considered in certain outbreak scenarios, especially if there's high two-dose vaccine coverage, it's a crowded setting where transmission may be enhanced, and when there's sustained ongoing transmission over multiple generations. I think if we have opportunities to do studies like the ones I mentioned, it would be valuable to collect additional data in these outbreaks so that we could further assess the impact of this sort of intervention. And I want to thank my state and local health department colleagues who all worked very hard on these two particular outbreaks, and people in the Division of Viral Diseases.